Welcome to the Resilient Mindset Podcast, an exciting new podcast by Resilience Queen, Justine Martin. Justine is the owner and founder of the Resilient Mindset, a division of the Justine Martin Corporation. Justine draws on her years of experience and knowledge, consulting with clients to develop and sustain a positive mindset. Focused on igniting your passion, purpose, and power, follow the Resilience Queen each week as she delves into the mind of her guests, exploring fascinating stories and inspiring journeys.
Zachariah Martin Taylor is a 29-year-old entrepreneur based in Townsville, Queensland, Australia. Zach is a veteran of the Australian Army. After an accident at work left him being discharged from the Army, Zach started his own business. From the garage to a warehouse and now global customers, this superstar has taken $900 in savings into a million-dollar business, demonstrating that it is possible to start and grow a global and competitive business from just $900. Zach is an Australian champion in drone racing, has a drone racing business and also a 3D printing business, a dad and a husband, and has the pleasure of being called my son.
Welcome back, listeners. Today I've got with me Zach. How are you, Zach?
Yeah, I'm good.
Now, this is a bit weird for Zach today because I'm actually his mum, but he's got a really interesting story that I thought we could delve into a little bit more, and a lot of people will get some insight into what Zach's about to say. So, Zach, what does resilience mean to you?
Being able to get back up and keep on striving forward no matter the adversity that you're currently facing.
Yep. Exactly. What's an adversity that you've faced, and what coping mechanisms did you use to gain resilience?
So when I was in the army in around about 2015, I fell into a weapons pit, which was about 2.5 meters deep, or a little bit deep, at night with all my kit on, so weapon, body armor, and helmet, and everything like that.
And how much did that weigh,
Zach? I think total weight would have been in about 50 kilos. From falling into the pit, sort of just got back out, and it was a 2 or 3 week field exercise, so just keep on moving forward. It was my first time being the section commander at the time, so just sort of had a job to do and just kept on doing it, but my knees had ballooned out, and I definitely heard a crunch and crack and pop when I fell in. I had to get the guys to lift me out. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning and we had no night vision gear. So that night, it was about three, we finished up digging the pits and everything like that. And just took a lot of ibuprofen and Panadol and woke up in the morning at about 5:30, and I just couldn't bend my knees at all. And then from there, I just was like, okay, well, we'll finish the field X off. We won't worry about it until after. And I did go see the medics and they just said, oh, you've probably just hyperflexed your knees. And I was like, okay, cool. From that, then I cracked into the field exercise, finished up, and it wasn't until I finally sort of laid down on the couch once I got back and after a couple of beers, and I thought, oh, shit, my knees, I can't bend my knees, because it was sort of the first time I'd stopped in about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then I just thought I'll do some rice and just rest and ice and compression and everything like that. And they sort of got a little bit better. So then I went to work and we did mountain biking and all that kind of stuff. And I was just, it was in pain and might as well go to the doctors, to the base medical and get them checked out. And they sort of came back that it was, that I'd just sort of hurt them a little. And that was nothing really major. And then I was doing PT. I think we're playing basketball or something like that. And I jumped up, and that's when I was like, nah, there's definitely something wrong. So then I sort of had to go into base medical and demand an MRI. And then I got the MRI done, and then I was driving back to base, and I got the call from base medical telling me to go in immediately. And I went in there, and they just asked if I was all right. And how I was walking, and I was like, yeah, it's fine. It hurts, and I'm getting popping and clicking and that. So I had pushed my right femur through my medial meniscus and fractured my femur, my tibia, and my fibula, and then tore my ACL in my right knee, and then in my left knee I had a bucket handle tear, the left one. So when I fell, like one leg went like that, so like the right leg, the knee just went straight through the cartilage, and then the left sort of popped to the left and caused the bucket handle tear. So they just said that they're going to get me booked in for surgery. I went through and did surgery, and that was probably the hardest part, was sitting out for the better part of 12 months, not being able to go, field and exercises and sort of be included in with the guys to sort of, do what you're sort of trained to do. And because of that, you sort of cop a bit of shit from the guys, which then sort of leads to, everything's all right, and you try and push yourself a little bit harder to get back into the game faster, but that just slows you down in the long run. I had my first surgery in May. I fell in March, so the first surgery was sort of in May, and then did the recovery on that one, and then I had my second surgery once I was fit again to then do my second surgery. On my other knee, and that was sort of sucked to get better and then to have to go through it all again instead of just getting both done at the same time, which I would have preferred. But because of that and because of my knees, I sort of used the opportunity at the same time. Just because I couldn't go field, I was able to spend a bit more time doing stuff around base and sort of doing my creative side and making signs and timber painting. Work and all that, yeah, and painting for different things on barracks, and donating a couple of paintings to 3CR and that kind of thing, which sort of pushed into my entrepreneur sort of side and starting up a little painting business and that kind of thing. But once I sort of got my knees sort of back and was doing more army stuff, that sort of just fell to the wayside. And then,
so do you think that the painting actually helped you cope with the adversity that you were facing with your knees? So it gave you another outlet, something to take your mind off things?
I think it was more just a creative outlet to do something, because obviously you can't go out and drink and can't hang out with the boys.
Army boys, yes.
Yeah, so it was one of those things that because I couldn't go out and do what I sort of really wanted to do, I was sort of just stuck at home instead of just, playing PlayStation or something like that. Just sort of doing some creative things. And,
which is good for the brain, good for the soul.
Yeah, it was good. And then it wasn't until I got better. I got posted down to Newcastle, a part of to the engineering recruiting role for a reservist company. And while I was down there, I re-injured my knees, so it was just like a double whammy. It was just all over again. And
was that doing PT that you injured them?
Yeah, so it was just doing PT again, running up some stairs, which I wasn't supposed to, which I said I couldn't do, but the PTI was like, you're doing it. I was like, okay, well, I'll do it if you want me to do it, and I'll fuck myself, so... That's what ended up happening, which I was pretty shitty about and got a bit depressed over and everything like that. And it was just, sort of all that hard work.
And time had gone.
Yeah, and trying, looking after yourself and everything like that, it just sort of sucked. So then after I re-injured them again, the unit ended up getting shut down anyway, amalgamating with another engineer regiment in Sydney. So they just sort of said that I had to post back to a full-time engineer regiment. That's where I chose Townsville again. But in the process of being down in Newcastle, sort of being separated from mates that you've made in Townsville and that kind of thing, I was sort of very bored on the weekends, and that's how I saw a video on drone racing, and I thought that was pretty cool. So decided to pick that up in Newcastle because there was a club in Newcastle. Mm. And after many crashed JB Hi-Fi drones and sort of persevering with it,
a broken glass door, if I remember rightly,
pretty much. So after doing that, then I sort of got into the groove of that. But then posting back to Townsville, there was no drone racing clubs in Townsville, that's when I decided to start one. And then we were breaking our parts too much. And so I decided to sort of start up a little store, just a little garage on the shelf.
And didn't at that time you were also in, got selected for the Army racing team?
Yeah, so I was doing Army drone racing team stuff. I'd sort of was on the team, but I hadn't done anything just yet. So I wasn't until sort of about March or March that I ended up being able to do Army drone racing stuff.
And what year was that, Zach?
2018.
Okay.
And then around about April 2018, that's when I started Rising Sun FPV, just because we couldn't get parts in Townsville fast enough. And then did a lot of Army drone racing stuff throughout the year of 2018 and 2019. I'm just trying to manage my knees, and I'd gone to see the surgeon multiple times. And they just sort of said, look, the remaining cartilage that you got, it's better to leave it in there. And because I had retorn my knees, and they just said to leave the cartilage in. They could do surgery, but it's just going to be fast track to a knee replacement earlier on in life than sort of what would be necessary. So just through because of that, just I ended up getting medically discharged in October, I think, 2019, and sort of decided to take Rising Sun FPV on full time after that. And then we're here today.
There you are. So do you find that with taking your focus away from thinking about your knees all the time and then being creative and starting the drone store actually helped overcome that adversity?
To a degree, yeah. I think just keeping your mind busy. I think I've got a lot of mates that have sort of either left defense or are leaving defense soon, and they've sort of just been like, you know what, I don't know what to do after defense. Or, you know, I don't think they really understand that once they leave, you're gone, kind of thing. And yep, you can catch up and that kind of thing with your mates, but you don't see them every single day. And I think a lot of guys that, you know, either join straight out of high school or something like that don't like necessarily understand. Yeah, so they don't really understand that when you do leave, you know, you sort of lose contact with majority of the boys. So having the drone racing club already there and having civilian mates and catching up with them definitely made things a lot easier and a smoother transition. Like, I wasn't ready to leave defense, but at the same time, where I was at in life with, you know, the business and Amelia and wanting children and that kind of thing, it was one of those things that it was probably the best time to go anyway. So
yeah,
it was because of that, then I was able to start move into the store, you know, take Rising Sun on full time and keep myself pretty bloody busy.
You're very busy.
Yeah, so keep myself busy.
I have to book in to see you. That's how busy you are. But we do live in polar opposites of Australia. You're in far north Queensland and I'm down in cold Victoria. So,
yeah, the cold just hurts the knees, hurts the joints. So I'm not moving to a colder climate. Just have to move up here.
It keeps telling me I've got to move to Queensland. So what has been your biggest failure to date, Zachy, and what resilience techniques did you use to get back up? Have you got a big failure?
Yeah, I don't know. Just trying to think
So let's get this straight. Zach's 29 years of age. He's married with a lovely wife, Amelia, and has a little boy, Odin, who's nearly two. He'll be two in September, and another on the way.
I don't know, really. I think we haven't really had huge failures in business just yet.
That's good.
Even though we do gamble a lot with purchases and starting product lines and that kind of thing. But I think, you know, it's one of those things that if it doesn't sell, then I'll just use it anyway. I think the big sort of ones was probably not setting myself up to for success with probably purchasing a house or a home while I was still in defence, and not sort of having that end goal of while being in that position of, you know, you're getting your paycheck every fortnight and you don't have to worry about it, not really necessarily worrying about money too much. It wasn't until sort of leaving defence and then going, oh, shit, this is, you know, you got to make your own crust, that, you know, you had.
Because you went from my strings, my apron strings, straight into the army at the age of 17, and then always having someone else tell you what to do. And then all of a sudden you're no longer in the army. You've got no one telling you what to do anymore. How did you cope with that?
Well, posting. So once I did injure my knees, going from the squadron, so, you know, being in the section and everything like that, was sort of more put into a more of a freedom sort of role, being able to sort of make my own decisions. I still, you know, had to, you know, a higher up that I had to deal with and sort of respond to, but wasn't until that there that you sort of got the freedom of, you know, no one checks over your work and that kind of thing. So you've got to make sure that you're on task, which I actually sort of thrived in. And that's why I ended up getting the role in Newcastle, because you were only, you know, you were left alone. You had around 90 people to look after in three different locations, and helping people enter defence through reserves and sending them down to Kapuka. And so it was a completely different sort of work-life balance in that regard. And I think that definitely helped me there then lead back into going back to a full-time Civvies. Regiment. I sort of struggled with that because I was then back into a section and had been used to sort of just working for myself, by myself in that role. But I struggled with that. But I think the Newcastle role definitely helped with, you know, your own
transitioning out.
Yeah. And then sort of leaving, I think it was sort of a big sigh of relief when I did leave, that I didn't have to worry about anyone else or trying to please like a higher up, for a, you know, a PAR. So that, you know, the personal annual review, or you didn't have to try and tick any boxes. And the fact that, you know, how hard you put into something was what you're going to see as a return. And that's what, you know, the Rising Sun's and definitely shown, is being able to go, you know, I could really coast by and live on a defense pension and just do sort of nothing and chill. And it would be, you know, that'd be great for maybe the first 6 months, but then you get slack, you probably drink more, you probably drugs. So, and then I see it with mates that do leave defense, and you go, well, shit, you know, that's probably not the best way to go. Whereas this, you know, you get a bit of stress, a bit of pressure, but at the same time, if you thrive in that work environment, then it's a sink or swim. But I enjoy.
And do you ever stop and I've asked you this question before, but it's been off air. Do you ever stop and look around of what you've actually achieved from nothing and go, oh, wow, pat yourself on the back?
Not really, because it's not over yet. I think we're just getting into the groove now with, you know, having the shop on a little, I mean, we literally had like prawn buckets. I don't think we've got them anymore, but we had prawn buckets. That was like where our stock was kept in a little shelf. I've still got the shelf. It's like in the warehouse. But then once we bought our house, when we left defense, and then, you know, moving from the little shelf into a whole 36 square meter car garage. And, you know, when I did leave defense, I took 2 weeks off where I did nothing. And if I wanted to crack a beer at 10 o'clock in the morning and get Uber Eats, I would. But that was for that 2 weeks where I, you know, I had spent 9 years just on the grind doing Defence Force stuff. So I took the time, played the games that I wanted to, watched a movie and just sort of,
you're
chilled
out. You're
talking
PlayStation games here,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah. And then once that sort of 2 weeks was up, that's when I sort of had made you know, a sort of a game plan and a business plan of where I want the business to be in the next 12 months. And we sort of surpassed that in the first 6 months of business. And it was just like, okay, well, what's next? So then after that, you know, we painted the garage with the logos and the drones. We carpeted the garage. We put the air conditioning in, and it looked like a proper storefront. And then we started getting more and more stock on, and we started getting bit more popular in the drone community. And we started offering 3D printing. Started offering
and in
that
the background, for listeners that can't see, if you hop on to Justine Martin Corporation YouTube channel and watch the vlog on this, you'll see in the background of Zach, he's got, what do you got there, mate, four printers?
You got four there. You got one there, and then there's one there, and then another printing at the moment. That's, so that glow, that's the UV light that keeps on passing up through the screen. But then we've got a whole other area as well. But yeah, once we started offering 3D printing, we started getting a lot more orders in, and we got better at printing as well. And then I got my first employee on the books and everything like that, 2020. And then at the, oh, was it? Might have been 2021. I can't, like, honestly, it's all a blur. But 2021, I think we got Mac on, and then around about
2020, because I came up and met him just before Christmas that time.
So 2020, and then 2021, we got Noel on. So that was the second employee, and we're still in the garage, and we're just getting tired. It was like a rabbit warren in there, and then we sort of decided to take the plunge and move into the storefront, which is about 189 square meters,
and it's 50 chockers.
With a 50 square meter shop front. That's, you know, we're already using the back to store. You know, because we just received 1,000 kilos of filament that we're now stocking and selling as our own brand. We've got, you know, heaps of big printers.
So for those that don't know, filament is what you put into the 3D printer to create the 3D print.
Yeah. So it was just a, you know, we're already sort of filling the space quite well, but I think, you know, we haven't really reorganized anything. We've got a lot of jobs on the go at the moment, which takes up a lot of space with 3D printing. Like at the moment, we've got a 1 meter tall Mandalorian statue that is ready to go for painting. But
well, can't wait to see that finished. I was up there, listeners, when that one was being printed. I think I'm one of Zach's best customers when it comes to buying 3D prints for Just Art Wellness classes. So you've done really, really well. I mean, you've gone from well, let's say a couch potato with no interest to now running a seven-figure business that you own. So the sky's the limit on where you're going to take that, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So who are your role models in resilience, Zach?
Probably just myself. No. probably someone by the name of Dan Kerrigan, who's one of the VC winners. We got to meet him while I was in the army, and sort of hearing him talk how he sort of they were on patrol and they came under fire, and one of their guys got shot, and so he sort of just ran up the hill and took all the fire, and he did that multiple times, and sort of, you know, it. In when you read it, you're like, oh, yep, cool. But hearing it come from his mouth, you know, he was like, I don't fucking want to do this, but I have to do it. And I think, you know, sort of having that mentality of, I don't really want to do this, but, you know, I'm going to do it anyway. And I think, you know, the feeling of once you've sort of done it, it's nice, you know, to reward yourself. But while you're doing it, you're just like, shit. And there's been multiple times where you just go, yeah, nah. Once you finish, it's good to go.
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's get to the finish point and then reassess on where we are. I mean, there is a saying that says that until you get uncomfortable about being uncomfortable, things won't change in your world. And you want to get things done, get uncomfortable and just do it. You know, we spend far more time procrastinating about doing a certain task than what the task would have actually been. And so just get in there straight away. So is there someone that inspires you in life, Zach?
Not really.
Jeez, listeners, you didn't even say his mum.
You want me to say you, I know. These are the
standard questions for everyone, Zachariah.
To be honest, I don't really I don't really want to be like anyone else or sort of strive to what anyone else has. I just sort of want to make it myself.
Good answer.
And be able to, you know, be able to say, well, look, I created that. And, you know, we're not by myself. We get a lot of help, even from the boys here, that do the drone racing. They'll come in and they don't work for stuff. They'll just do it for the hell of it. And they come along with the journey, with us, which is great. And I think they stop more often than I do and go, look what you've done. I go, well, no, it's not just me. It's, there's everyone else who has got a little hand in it to help get it done.
I see the changes. I pre-COVID would have come up a lot more, but each trip that I've come up, which is about every 3 or 4 months, I see changes in the store and how big it's growing and, the empire that you're building, so to speak. Do you want to describe to the listeners what drone racing actually is?
So drone racing kicked off in about 2015 in Australia and sort of came really popular, like 2016, 2017 and so on. Drone racing uses a camera on the drone that sort of sits inside the drone itself, like sitting in the cockpit, and that's what FPV stands for, is first person view. And when you build the drone, you build it with something called a VTX or a video transmitter, and it transmits the video from the camera to a pair of goggles that you wear, and that's how you actually see and fly around at speeds of about 150 to 250 kilometers an hour, and navigate around gates and flags, and you keep up with everyone else. And there's different types of drone racing. You've got like little micro drones, which are about the size of fit the size of your hand, and then you've got 5-inch, and then all the way up to X-Class, which is sort of what we pioneer here in Townsville, and sort of really push and leaders in the world for it is X-Class, so experimental class, where they're 1 meter by 1 meter in size. They go about 250 kilometers an hour around the track. They're bloody huge and they're expensive.
And they're fast. And they're expensive when you crash them, aren't they?
Yeah. So, but I mean, they're pretty cool looking.
And you build them for people, Zach? Do you build them for people?
Yeah, we do. So, we build anything from, 3D printers here or repair to repairing drones and building custom drones for people. We do design couple of frames as well. So at the moment we've got a Jormungandr, which is the Midgard Serpent, which is one of our X-Class frames. We've got the big F and Wedge, which is one of our other X-Class frames. Then we have some smaller like Revenant and that kind of thing.
And you've designed them from scratch?
Yeah, so we design those up and then we sell those.
Them.
Yeah, so get them cut out of carbon and we do all the 3D printing and everything like that. We sell those ones.
Wow. That's phenomenal. Remember, he was that couch potato for 2 weeks. So, and it's just grown from there. So what are your passions in life, Zach? So obviously drones.
Yeah. Probably family. Since we've only just got Odin in the last 2 years, but I don't know what I'd bloody do without him.
Yeah.
Just creating creating an environment that it's fantastic to go home to, and that's about it. Is on the home side, I think for business, I haven't really set a new goal for the business, just because I really don't know what we can accomplish, because at the moment we've got so much on the go, and we can go in any which direction.
So it's about focusing on the goal that you're actually working on rather than some future goals at the moment.
Yeah. So at the moment, I think the goal that we sort of had focused on was just stability. So obviously we've just made a whole lot of changes with moving to the storefront and everything like that. So I think it's sort of taking a back step on the growth of the business and sort of going, okay, well, building up our customer base with our regular customers and sort of refining our services that we can offer to those customers and being able to ensure that, we meet the deadlines and everything like that, not sort of overselling ourselves. So, which I think if we were to keep on with the growth, we're going to have to get a couple more employees and everything like that. But at the moment, we're just not there to do that. So we're just going to take that back.
Being realistic as well with your goals.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know.
And how do you cope with the pressure?
Oh, it's not really too much pressure in it, really. I think the most stressful thing is if there was no orders placed for like a month, which
that would be stressful.
Yeah, that'd be pretty stressful. But at the same time, I don't think that's ever really going to happen. It's because we have a very niche and sort of interesting business as well. I think the big problem we do have is not having enough stock for first timers. But something that we can definitely sort out. But yeah,
and COVID hasn't helped, has it? With getting stuff in and setbacks and
COVID helped the business with growth.
But we people look for hobbies.
Yeah, so you know, being able to build a drone at your house and fly it in your backyard, or 3D printing and that kind of thing. You know, we definitely shot up a lot more, but to try and get the stock in to replenish the inventory on the parts, you know, majority of that stuff comes from China. So, you know, our normal shipping times went from about 2 to 3 days to 9 to 20 day shipping time.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't make money on stuff that's not here. And that was a bit of a struggle point, but it's getting better now. So.
Oh, that's good. Right. Another question for you. Just picking one out of here that you'll just love. How do you practice self-care and personal wellness?
I'm pretty terrible at it at the moment, if I'm honest. I haven't been to the doctor since like I left the army.
Zachariah.
So realistically, probably something that I could get on top of. But
thank you for being honest.
Yeah.
And your mother's going to give you a talk after this.
Ah, good luck. But the big thing is that I've been so sort of head down in this that I haven't really worried too much about it, because I'm sitting down the majority of the day anyway. My knees haven't been, you know, too bad. Definitely they're not great. They're making a lot more popping and clicking, but there's not much that can be done about it anyway.
You take time out with Odin and
I think Amelia. Like mental well-being, I think, you know, is having that break. Definitely knowing when I'm getting burnt out. I can 100% tell when that's happening, when I sort of become disinterested at a task or just couldn't think of anything else other than like not wanting to do it.
So do you think it's changed? Because I know that when you had the business at home in the garage, as a lot of my listeners do have home-based businesses, do you think it's easier now that you've got the shop front and you can switch work off when you come home?
I found it more difficult. It's probably more of a question for Amelia, but when it was at home, I could just go in and check the 3D printers, or I could, you know, if there was nothing on, I'd be like, all right, cool, I'll just go work on this and, you know, go look at this product and get that in. And, you know, I think that definitely helped us grow a hell of a lot more, because I would spend every waking moment either in that garage or, you know, just checking the 3D prints and that kind of thing. So there was no work-life balance. It was all work, and then finish up and then have dinner and then straight back into it. The original plan when I did leave the army was that I was going to look after, I was going to be a stay-at-home dad. And then once the business started growing, that's when I said to him, I'm like, yeah, no, we can't do that anymore. And even she agreed. So then we ended up, that's why Odin's a daycare. But having the business at the storefront, I think it put more pressure on, because that stock's not in my garage 20 meters away.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. You know, you're then entrusting the security of the premise that you've got all your sort of work at.
Livelihood.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we've got the insurance and everything like that, but it's just one of those things that we take sort of almost like the responsibility to the customers that, you know, we can get their orders out at 3 o'clock every day. You know, same 3D printing and all that kind of stuff, that we can do that for our customers. And, you know, if anything was to stop us from doing that, then that's what sort of unsettles me and sort of, you know, makes it a bit worrying. So having all the stock, at the store was, you know, one of those things. I think the other thing was, the 3D printers. Now, they're great when they work, but well, there's been a couple of times we've come in here and they're just the spaghetti. So when the filament comes out, it comes out as like a molten plastic. If a print falls over or gets knocked, then it just comes out in just a random fashion and just looks like a bowl of spaghetti. It's money lost and money wasted. Whereas, you know, in the garage, I would have picked that up straight away. Whereas here, you're not here for like 12 hours or on a weekend. So it was one of those things. But having the store now definitely means that once I leave here, there is no more work to be done. I'm at home, you know, completely and not answering phone calls and emails and all that kind of stuff. I might answer the occasional Facebook message if I'm watching TV or something like that, but I don't take it as a full responsibility that, you know, we have a set business hours now and we don't necessarily care.
So you've got boundaries within your business now, which you probably didn't have when you were at home.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right. So talking about TV, what's your favorite movie that features a person's inner strength to get up?
Star Wars. Probably.
He's a big movie buff.
I'd probably have to say Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan. The D-Day scene. I remember watching that movie, which I probably shouldn't have, which is bad parenting, when I was like 9 or 10 when it first came out, when we were in Glen Innes. And I remember watching that.
You were under the age of 10.
And it blew my mind. I didn't know anything like that existed. And then watching it again and multiple times and that kind of thing, but having, you know, being able to keep on going and striving forward. You know, for something that's actually happened, it still blows my mind. And even, you know, being in engineers where, you know, you have to do the, you know, either breach a minefield or run up to the wire with the Bangalore torpedo and actually going, shit, if we ever had to do this, you know, would we be able to do it? Was always something that played on everyone's sort of mind and going, oh, shit, you know, and even doing you know, the explosive, you know, searching for IEDs and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You know, there's only sort of a metal detector between you and the road, and sort of having the trust in your equipment and keep on taking that step forward was one of those things that, yeah. So I think, yeah, that movie there is probably the big one.
Okay. I'll have to rewatch that one. I'm sure I watched it when you were 9 as well. What's a quote that you live by?
If in doubt, throttle out. if you're uncomfortable in what you're doing, I guess the best way to sort of describe it, it's a drone saying. So like, you know, if you're in trouble with a drone, you just push the throttle up and it'll get out of it. And I think to put that to everyday life is if you're uncomfortable in what you're doing, then you're probably doing it right. And pushing yourself, if you know you were only ever comfortable with the things that you wanted to do, we wouldn't strive to, you know, to even make a business or, you know, anything like that. There's definitely been times where I've been like, why am I doing this? What is it all for? And I, you know, seeing, you know, people make a hell of a lot more money for doing shit all work, definitely sort of hits close to home. Whereas, you know, I enjoy what I do. Not every day. I have some shit days, but I enjoy what I do. And I think the,
It's important to enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah, that's correct. Like being able to have, I guess, a sense of pride in your work. You know, you can definitely see that in, you know, stuff like artists and anyone that creates something with their bare hands. Being able to sort of say, look, I made that and I'm proud of it, definitely helps.
So what guides you to find purpose and direction?
I would say probably Odin now, probably him. You know, setting things up so that he has the best life possible. So, you know, working hard to then create, you know, something that he wants to, that he can do, and creating those opportunities, but then also sort of being a bit of a peer, for him and going, that's my dad. And, which is something that I really, am keen about. I think he, you know, even when he came to the store yesterday, with me, I think him just walking around and looking at all the stuff, I think he's starting to sort of get a grasp on, that does some pretty cool stuff.
He'll be flying his first drone before his fifth birthday. I can see it now.
Yeah, well, he's almost. We'll see. Probably by three we'll have something.
Tell me about the three most influential people in your life and how they've impacted you.
I'd probably say my wife, Amelia. She definitely pulled my head in when I first met her. Probably she just did. Going out drinking too much. I think she definitely persevered with me. And I don't know if it's paid off for her, but
we'd like to think it has, Zach.
Yes. She definitely helped me out, and you know, we've both sort of made a bit of a life together now, which is great. Second, probably my old boss at Army, just before I was like in the process of leaving and everything like that. Worked for him for a year and a half. I think he was sort of one of the first bosses that actually sort of listened and sort of gave me a lot of leniency with letting me being able to do a lot of Army drone racing stuff, and he could see sort of where I was going to be heading at the time, sort of wanted to create a business. And, you know, we used to sit down sort of on a Friday afternoon in the office and sort of have a big fat chat about sort of what was going on and sort of where, you know, he was going as well and what he wanted to do, but then also sort of what I wanted to do, which was one of those things. And then third, probably you. I'll go you.
Oh, thanks, darling.
That's all right. Probably you for the reason of, you know, how far sort of we've come from being Glen Innes and then moving to Western Australia.
So we were homeless at one stage, let's tell the listeners. You were about eight or nine, and we had nowhere to live, and we had to live in a caravan park, and you both got the chicken pox, and it was snowing, it was in the middle of winter, and we've come a long way in the last 20 years, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a lot to live up to, so I always think God help my kids with it all.
But
we don't have to agree.
Oh, it's need to. But no, I think you know, being able to come, you know, to even sit here today and go, it's one of those things that no matter the sort of struggles and that kind of thing, but having the diversity and the push forward is one of those things, yeah.
Thanks, darling. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self one more piece of advice, what would it be?
Invest in Bitcoin. Probably, like, don't shy away from it when you saw it on Reddit in 2012, like 2010. Oh, well. Probably just don't drink that last beer when you're out and go home.
Yes, because I did get that 4 a.m. phone call one morning.
Probably just there's not really anything that I would want to change sort of from 18 to now. You know, it's definitely had struggles and good times and everything like that, but I think that sort of has made me the person that I am today, and I wouldn't really have it any other way, apart from, you know, the investing in the Bitcoin thing. That would be super nice, but
wouldn't it?
Really, yeah, there's nothing that I'd really want to change.
That's good.
Probably take better care of your hair, so it's, you know, it doesn't fall out when you're Zach's
going bald.
Yeah, that's get it from the mother's side as well.
He blames me for everything. All right, let's change the subject. If you won $10 million tomorrow, what would you spend it on?
I would probably buy a really nice house because that's what I sort of want to do. Probably just buy a nice house, but not lavish. But, you know, one with a theater room that has a lockable door so the kids just can't come in. A pool. So really nice pool and entertainment area, which I really want to do just because a bit of a social butterfly.
Where you get that from.
Yeah, and like having some beers after race day and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The other sort of 9.5 million, I think I would really, I'm really not sure. There's nothing that, you know, take a trip around the world or anything like that. I'm not really.
You're not a very materialistic.
Oh, I'm very hard to buy gifts for. I know that. Oh,
yeah, we know.
I would probably invest it more into myself and sort of creating and setting up Odin and whatever this next one's name is, which Amelia and me can't agree on names just yet, but we'll see. We'll see who wins the battle. But really, I don't know. It'd be nice, but.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Bloody Townsville. Townsville with a lockable gate. Stop people from breaking in.
A big fence.
No, I like where we currently are. I don't think I would like to live sort of anywhere else.
That's good.
And that kind of thing. I think living in a different location is, you know, you set up all your friends and all that kind of stuff again. And
we've done that a few times. Like
yeah. So I think that's one of the big things is that I'm happy where I currently am. And out of all the places that, you know, we have lived, I think this is probably the nicer one, except for it's pretty shitty for about a month and a half every year because of the summer. But you know, we've got good air conditioners now, so
yeah,
it's good.
What was your favorite subject in school?
Science.
Yeah.
Science, probably. Yeah, science. Science. Human biology wasn't too bad, but science was cool.
I thought you liked woodwork.
Woodworking was all right, but it wasn't like nothing to rave about.
Okay. Well, there you go. I learned something new about you today. Yeah. Okay. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you are my son.
Yeah, you're the godfather.
Tea, coffee, hot chocolate, or wine, or beer? Or tea? Did I say tea?
I always take a beer.
All right. And what's your preference? Great Northern.
Or anything. Oh, I'm a big fan of pale ales at the moment.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, hint.
It's one of our traditions is when I go up to Townsville that we go and have a beer together, isn't it, Zach? Just you and I for the time. Okay, so what are three books you could recommend to my audience and why?
What was that? It just cut out.
All right, I'm just going to mark that. What are three books you'd recommend to my audience and why?
Probably Matthew Riley, Hell Island, because it's a super quick read and that sort of covers all of sort of his topics and what he's really good about writing about. He had a pretty shit TV series, TV movie just recently, but his books are really good. Probably... I think it's Andy Remick, Kremlin.
Yeah.
It's just a good book to get lost in and forget about what's currently happening in your life because it's bloody full on.
Yeah.
Very like military and guns and some, you know, it's got Russia in there and everything like that. It's just a good read. Probably the third one. Now, I can't remember what it was, what the name of it. But essentially, it's about a Australian army engineer who went through the Vietnam War. And it was just interesting to read because I was reading it while I was going through the School of Military Engineering. And he referenced a lot of SME where we currently were. And it was to the point where we, that week, we went to the museum and like one of the tanks that he has in the book, and there's photos of it in the book, was actually at the museum. So it was just super weird coincidence that, you know, he brought it up because he said that, you know, to get the tank to stop when it was clearing the mines, they would shoot at the tank. And looking at the back of the tank, you'd see all the bullet marks where they would shoot it to stop it because they didn't have radio comms with it. But I think something that read about something that you're either going to see or that you're going to, that you want to do, and it sort of will push you to go do it.
To better your mind.
Yeah.
What are three movies that you could recommend?
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of movies. All of them? I don't know. Probably Train to Busan.
Yeah.
If you like zombie movies.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you're into zombies.
It's a Korean zombie movie. It's pretty good. Dune.
Mm-hmm. The new one or the old one?
The new one.
Yeah.
And then Blade Runner 2049. The sci-fi elements and the soundtrack. I think the soundtrack was sort of what really sold those to me.
Cool. What's one question you'd wish I'd asked and how would you have answered it? That silence is him thinking.
Yeah, I don't know.
We pretty much covered everything, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. You'll think of one later and say to me, where can listeners find you online, Zaki?
So if you jump onto Facebook, you can find me at Rising Sun FPV. Same for Google, Rising Sun FPV. We have two different sort of handles for our business that we do. For our 3D printing, we fall under Rising Sun 3D. That's where we post majority of our 3D printing busts and designs and everything like that. You can jump on YouTube as well. You'll see all our drone racing videos, or you can jump onto our website and it will direct you to all of it. You'll see all the products that we stock and services that we offer.
And that's risingsunfpv.com.au?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. I look it up enough. I know these things. So we'll put all those links in the bio as well so people can get in contact with you. So, Zach, I just want to thank you today for doing this for Mummy.
Yeah, you wouldn't leave me alone.
I've been at him and at him. I wanted him in the first series. Should have done the first series. There was less questions than the second series. So thanks for taking some time out of your day. Just to clarify, I'm actually sitting in my wardrobe today. For those of you that are watching it on YouTube, you'll see all my clothes in the background. That's because Zach's sister and all her children and partner lumped at my house last night because their house nearly burnt down with an electrical fault to the meter box. So I've got kids running around everywhere, and we adapt and we modify and things go on, and that's what builds resilience. So here we are. Anyway, Zach, thank you for your time today.
That's all right.
And remember, listeners, until next time, stay resilient.
With over 11 years public speaking expertise, Justine thrives on delivering a powerful and empowering keynote to audiences of all sizes. From a packed room of 500 people to an intimate gathering of 50 people, Justine will command the room with her inspiring journey and engaging antidotes. Email hello@justinemartin.com.au to book Justine for your next event. We hope you enjoyed the Resilience Mindset podcast. Remember to subscribe to the podcast to get your weekly fix listening to Resilience Queen Justine Martin. Follow Justine on social media at Resilience Mindset or log on to justinemartin.com.au. And until next time, remember, life doesn't get easier or more forgiving. We get stronger and more resilient.